So we're in the pub, the Old Mitre in the centre of London, just off Hatton Gardens, and I'm here with Michael Pritchard, best known for the British Photography blog, and now as president?
Director General.
Could you tell us a little bit about what you founded there when you joined?
I mean, I joined the society in September 2011. I'd been a member for 20-odd years before that in my own right, but what I hadn't really been that aware of was the sort of the day-to-day activities of the society, what was happening outside of my own particular interest, which was the history side. So day one, I was sort of literally thrown in at the deep end and said, well, here's an organisation that's 160 years old, we'd like you to manage it and manage the staff, the building, work with the volunteers and the council and the trustees, and then also act as the public face of the society. So that those were the three areas that I was given to work to. But actually my experiences to date have been very good. The society, I think, has reached a turning point, and I think there's been a recognition the last couple of years that the society has needed to change, and some of those things have been put into place before I joined. I think me joining the society is part of that process as well, in terms of bringing someone with a bit of commercial experience from my work at Christie's, involved in photography. So I've always had a passion for photography, and I think that's essential for anyone that's working for the society. And also really someone that's perhaps got a vision about where the society needs to be going, and also enacting council's vision. And I suppose that begs the question, well, where is the society going?
Well, my perception of it is that it's a very large... What is the membership?
The membership now is just creeping up to 11,000.
Right, which is, it must be the largest body representing photographers in the country.
It is, and we do have some overseas members as well, particularly in Asia and North America, but yes, we're pretty much the largest body in the UK.
But my sense of it is that there's a strong body of interested amateurs, then there are some professionals and specialists, but the emphasis being on their sort of technical expertise. There's more to it than that, though.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose at a simplistic level, then yes, I would agree that's the way it works. But again, this is something I've realised since I've been working at the society, that yes, the amateur's important, and the membership subscriptions that they pay are very important to the society because it keeps it running. But the membership is actually much broader than that. There's a big professional component, there's a student component, there are people that are involved in photography in a whole myriad of ways, whether they're picture editors, archivists, publishers. You know, they're all interested in photography as a subject, and I think that's really what differentiates the society from many of the other bodies within photography, that we're not just representing one constituency. We're not just about professionals or advertising photographers or wedding photographers. We're actually about photography as a subject. And I think that really is a key difference that I would really highlight to anyone that asked me about the society.
So do you think that the society has a slightly stuffy reputation that's undeserved, or is that what you're trying to change? Is that your mission?
I think a bit of both. I mean, yes, yeah, there's 160 years worth of history there. Inevitably that comes with some baggage. It also comes with a lot of very good things as well. There's a lot of respect for the society, but yes, you know, some people have a perception that it's old men drinking porter and smoking cigars. Well, that may have been the case up until the early 70s, but even the society has moved on from that.
I suppose the thing that's, from our perspective, the thing that's changed the most in the last, say, 10 years has been the massive growth in education, and also the entry of photography in a dramatic way into the art world. So now people are going to see massive shows at the Tate, which would have been unimaginable, you know, 20 years ago. How has those two changes reflected in the RPS?
I think the easy one to answer is education, because again, the society has, as an educational charity, then we've had a responsibility to education. I think we've done a lot in the past in terms of doing very practical things around workshops and courses, and doing a lot of things in terms of giving bursaries to under 25s and students. So there's a lot of very practical things we've done. I think, in fairness, we've probably not been as good as we should have been in the past, and certainly the council has realised that has needed to change. We've had some really interesting research undertaken by some people in education about society and what it can offer back to students and within the formal education sphere, and also what we offer back to the public as well, and help them in education in a very broad sense.
If someone who'd done a BA had come and went through your process, would they pass?
It's a good question. I think traditionally a lot of student work particularly probably would not have received a society distinction, because the society has very clear requirements about what it's looking for at its distinctions and has been very good about assessing a certain type of work. I think the way that student work has gone, particularly over the last probably 20, 25 years, has diverged from what might have been taught in the 50s and 60s. And is less formal in that sense. And I think the society probably has not been best equipped to look at that work and to assess it through its formal distinctions panel. And
is that a way of saying that the your process is still stuck in the 1950s of deciding what's good and what isn't good?
I think it's a way of saying that we're changing as a society, and we are conscious that we have our particular strengths in terms of our distinctions panel, and that's why the exemption route is actually important to us, because it's a way of recognising work that might not normally perhaps always get recognised properly through the formal distinctions process. So, you know, we know there's good student work out there, and I think the universities have a way of maintaining standards, and I think we have to be big enough to accept that we don't need to second guess what the universities are doing in terms of maintaining standards. We can work with them, we can accept that they have standards, and we can say, well, actually, yes, it's a different type of work to that which the society traditionally would have put through its distinctions programme. But that doesn't make it any less valid. It's different, but it's still good work, and I think that's important.
Which I suppose brings on to the art question, because the same debate about technical excellence as against some aesthetic criteria has came up. We probably both remember, for example, when Richard Billingham's work was very widely circulated, a lot of people who had a more traditional criteria of what was good photography denouncing it as being technically incompetent, which was obviously not really the what made the work attractive and interesting to people. So the art world must be another puzzle to fit into this equation.
Yeah, I suppose in one sense the society, in a sense we don't interact particularly with the art world as such, other than through members of the art world being members of the society. You know, we're not about producing work ourselves, it's about our members producing work, or those people associated with the society producing work. But, I mean, yes, the changes that we've seen in the art world have obviously impacted on students, on our members, and it's changed the way people take photographs, and it's also, I think, changed the way people look at photographs, and I think they're accepting much more perhaps of, say, you know, technical deficiencies if the creative side is there. And I think the society particularly has been very strong at looking at the technical side and the creative side together. I think now that the creative side is often more important to people that go to the Tate and to look at exhibitions, then, you know, we need to mirror that to some extent. We don't want to move away totally from the craft of photography and the technical side of it, so we still have to recognise that for the people that want that side of their work recognised. But we also then have to look at the creative side and say, well, actually, this is extremely creative work. We need to be aware of both, and it's a balancing act, and yeah, hopefully we're going to get it right most of the time. I'm sure there will be something that goes through occasionally that, you know, someone will question or say, why did that go through? It's inevitable, but, you know, most of the time we get things right. I think also what's interesting, the way photography is changing at the moment, though, I would guess that within the next 6 to 8 months we will get someone submitting a distinctions panel having been taken on an iPhone or some other form of something that isn't a camera, shall we say, in the formal sense of the word. And I think that would send out a really good signal to people that it doesn't matter what you're taking pictures on, how you're making those images, it's about what you're producing at the end of it, and whether it's on an iPhone, a gaming console that has a camera in it, you know, that's less important than what you're producing. And I think if we can, you know, when that day happens, and I'm sure it will happen, and I think we can use that to show, you know, we're about image making and we're not about so much necessarily about what you're using to shoot on.